And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm good, man. I'm coming off an exciting Monday Night Football weekend. I mean, Monday Night Football game or observation.
It felt like a weekend.
I mean, it was so much going on. DJ, I don't know about you, man. I just feel like the football, it might not be the cleanest football in terms of like the sloppiness and the precision that we want, but it certainly is entertaining because all these games are coming down to the final minute.
Yeah, I feel like each and every game has been interesting and entertaining. That one, the Colts had a firm grip on, and then Lamar Jackson did his thing. There's a lot of takeaways from that game, which I want to get to, and we will get to here in just a little bit. But we also have, man, it was right. I was doing this that broadcast with Money because MJD's overseas, so he's in the UK, and you've done all that stuff with the UK before. So I was on Channel 5 doing the Monday night thing with Money last night. So it's fun. You kind of do the during the commercials and sitting there watching the game. And then it just felt like more information kept coming out on the Gruden thing. And then all of a sudden it was like, whoosh, it was over. Like he had resigned and it was over, like right in the middle of that ball game. But I guess I just go to you, Buck, get your reaction.
You know, it's tough, DJ. So there's a thing when you work for, when you play for the Raiders or work for the Raiders, once a Raider, always a Raider. So their organization is always going to be near and dear to my heart just because of all the things. And then as a kid growing up, I always loved the Raiders because the Raiders were the place where all the misfits, the outcasts, everybody could fit in Oakland or with the Raiders because, look, they took everybody and they welcomed everybody. And then when you think about the late Al Davis and the pioneer that he was in the league and the things that the franchise has been known for in terms of opportunities and providing opportunities and, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion and all of those things. You think about Tom Flores going into the Hall of Fame this year, first Hispanic coach to win a Super Bowl. You think about Art Shell being one of the few African-American coaches to be there. You think about Amy Trask being a high-ranking football official in the organization. The Raiders have been on the forefront of that movement. And so when all of the emails and this stuff came out, on Coach Gruden, I knew it was going to be very, very hard for him to retain his role within the organization. Because if the late Al Davis is there, like, it goes counter to everything that he was about. It runs counter to the way the Raiders have done business. You then look at their current composition of their roster and you think about Carl Nassib making a historic point by coming out and being the first openly gay player to play in the National Football League. And the community welcoming him and, you know, treating him with the respect and the tolerance and reverence that we have for everybody. And so it just makes it very, very difficult for the leader of the franchise to have that hanging in the past. And I'm not saying that people cannot evolve and that you should always be judged by your lowest points. But, you know, it's a part of your history. It's a part of your fabric. And I think at a time where, as a country and in general, we're trying to evolve and trying to move forward and trying to be more inclusive, it's hard when someone has put out divisive rhetoric. It's hard to bounce back from that, particularly when it's the leader of your organization.
Have you ever been on a team that lost it? The coach was let go or resigned in the middle of a season?
I have not. I've not.
So you never played for an interim? Yeah.
No, I've never played for an interim coach, but I can only imagine how difficult it would be to upset the apple cart, right? And in this situation, it's even trickier, right? So normally if you have an interim coach, you're talking about a coach that is fired, the team is underperformed for a while, like you kind of get the reading of the tea leaves, it happens, but it happens because everyone is on notice because we're not playing well. So when we're not playing well, everything is subject to change. This is a situation where there was a comfort level in knowing that Gruden was going to be there for 10 years. He has six years remaining on his deal. He was still building something. The players and everyone is very comfortable knowing that he's the king of the kingdom. Yeah. But now you remove that and you're just like, okay, we got an interim coach, Coach Versace, special team coach, you're the head coach. A lot of moving parts. And man, I don't even know. Like, I think the staff is trying to figure out what do we do, who's in charge, how are we going about it? And the players are looking for direction. And because he was so intimately involved with the offense, that's really where the change is going to be impacted, right? Normally in these situations, when you have an offensive-minded head coach or an offensive coordinator, play caller, head coach, the defense operates independently. Gus Bradley is kind of like the head coach of the defense. He handles them with, look, anonymity and does his thing. This is different. So now you have to figure out who's going to be the offensive coordinator, play caller, how are we going to do this, who is going to stand in front of the team and present and install and all this other stuff. A lot of moving parts, man.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is this team, you know, I did the Monday night game against the Chargers. They're 3-0. They're the only, I think they were the only undefeated team at that point in time in the league coming into that game.
How quickly, in a week.
It's like 11 days. It's just like, the whole thing. Here they are. They're 3-2. It was a kind of a lifeless performance. And I almost wonder, after looking at it in hindsight, that performance was so lackluster against the Bears. We talked about it because we had to talk about Justin Fields and his performance in that game. And I thought, you know, it's kind of boring, but he didn't really have to do anything because literally the Raiders did nothing in that game. It was just kind of a lifeless bunch. And I wonder if some of this stuff going on, you know, that we knew about just a little bit, and that had to have been trying to navigate that and deal with all these issues. Surely that had to have an impact on what we saw on the field.
Absolutely, because the weight of the world was on John Gruden's shoulders when he had to prepare for the game. And I don't care what anyone says, DJ, we can talk about like, oh, no, we're not distracted. We're focused on the here and now. It's one thing to have players that are dealing with distracting issues. It's another thing to have leaders. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it in two places. We saw it in Las Vegas with the Raiders. We saw it down in Jacksonville with Urban Meyer. When the leader is having to deal with distractions, I believe it filters to everybody. Because how can I best lead when I'm having to manage all of these other things that take away from my ability to get the best out of the people that I'm responsible for? And so with the Raiders and with Jacksonville, I don't think you saw their best performances because the leader of the team couldn't give them their best. And so I think it showed up for sure in the Raiders game, because that was not the Raiders team that had played the previous 3 weeks. The energy, the effort, the crispness and efficiency that the offensive would normally execute. I mean, what Derek Carr barely had over 200 yards. I mean, we've seen him throw for 400 yards. Like one of those times, like he's lighting it up. Justin Pira. And I'm not saying that the Bears are bad, but they certainly weren't the monsters of the Midway coming into it. And so, I do believe it zapped some of the energy on the team and throughout the organization, because you're having to put out fires behind closed doors, which only takes away from the time that you can devote to preparing your team.
Yeah. I mean, man, you look at this thing going forward, our buddy, Mike Mayock, our former colleague there as a general manager. I think there was, you know, Mike was getting a lot of heat from Raider fans, you know, about struggles of this player or that player. Mike will never say anything because that's who he is and what he's about. He's not going to come out and say, hey, this was not my call on this one. I always say, who do you think? Look at the money. That'll tell you who's making all the decisions. Look at the money.
Yes.
And that was John Gruden had one of the most expensive, the richest contract in NFL coaching history. So obviously he had all the power. So now, you know, we'll see what happens going forward. I would think that, you know, Mike, culture standpoint and a PR standpoint, trying to, you know, get the building back together after this can really rip the, you know, this ripped the team apart because of how hurtful a lot of that stuff was, and trying to get everybody back on the same page here. That's a challenge. And then now you look at all the decision-making, it's going to be his team. It's going to be his opportunity. You know, it's only so much you can do in the middle of a season in terms of roster construction, but, you know, I think we can now say, okay, well, this is Mike's chance to kind of build this team a little bit more so in his image.
Yeah, no, and it's really important, right? So the things that you believe in as a team builder, you want to put those things into practice, particularly if you're given a 9-month run to be able to be the general manager, if it's even that, it may be a 4-month run based on the way the things play out in the season. The number one thing that Mayock has to do is he has to get everyone in the building together in a meeting, and you have to have an open air conversation, because you have to be able to move past this. Even though Mike wasn't responsible for what took place, he now has to deal with the fallout. So you got to be able to get all of that other stuff out, so we now can talk about going forward. You can't ignore it. You can't act like, hey, it's Monday or Tuesday, we're just going to go about. No, you have to address it. The other thing that you have to figure out, when Rich Bisaccia is named the interim head coach, you now have a staff full of Gruden guys who are having to deal out with the fallout from Gruden.
They've got to distance themselves from Gruden, but while also acknowledging that he's the one who brought him into the building. That's tricky. Yes. It's difficult to navigate that.
And for some of them, they're real friendships.
Yeah.
And so depending on how those friendships were played out, like, I mean, you have guys who will continue to love and respect him for who he is and what he's meant to them. You have some other guys who are looking at him sideways, like, man, I didn't know. I thought we were buddies, but how can we be buddies? But you may feel a certain way and all of those things. So you got to manage and navigate all of that. Separate and apart from now having all these players that you're responsible for who are also confused walking around like, wait, coach is not here. So how are we going to go about it? Like, we normally have our routine and who's going to break us down? Who is leading us out? Who's going to do the talk? It's all changing. And so I think for Bisaccia, this is his moment, right? Everyone knows that he has wanted to be a head coach for a long time. And so now that you're the interim, how quickly can you, hey, I appreciate coach, you doing all that you've done, but now I got a chance to go and run the team for maybe 10 or 12 games. I got to figure out the way I can do it so maybe I can keep this job. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff, a lot of agendas, individual agendas that are going on at the same time. And, you know, the only thing that you can control is trying to get the team to win.
Yeah, it's interesting times there for the Las Vegas Raiders. The one thing, you know, I think that Bucky and myself having just a little different perspective, having been on the scouting side of things, you know, because you hear all the conversations about this and people coming at it from different angles. This is the one thing that I was left with, Buck, and I know you can appreciate this, is the amount of people that moved their families, that took this job, that maybe had other opportunities and signed up for this, and they go there not knowing any of this existed. And now you think of the number of those families are going to be impacted by the decisions that were made by John Gruden. So, I mean, that's the thing I think of, is that, like, I think, oh, John Gruden's out. Okay, that's it. It's over. And you don't think of all those other families, not employees. I'm talking families. And so that's the part I was thinking.
Yeah, the trickle-down effect, right? The trickle-down effect of everybody. Like, hey, we got this great opportunity. We can go to Vegas. He's signed a 10-year deal, so we're going to have a chance to be here for a while. We got stability. Hey, this is one where we can move the kids and we can put them in school because, oh, yes, you're going to be able to go all the way through high school. And daddy promises that you'll never have to go to another high school because we're good.
We got security.
Right. It changes all of that stuff, all those things that you do as –
like I feel like that never. Yeah. I feel like that aspect, when stuff unfortunately like this comes up, that aspect is never thought of. But we've lived it. We've had our lives. Our lives in those jobs are in the hands of other men. You know, their decision making.
Yeah, and everybody, like DJ,
other men and women, I should say. Yeah, you know, it's just up to their decision making.
And you think about that, and that's one of the things that you don't. And I hadn't even really thought about it, but yes, you make a decision on that because we both have been given opportunities, right, where you may have to decide between one spot and another spot, and you're going down the checklist of, okay, well, this one may offer more money, but it's more stability here. And when I think about this situation and that situation, it's stable. We got a chance to grow and build it. And hey, he just signed a 5-year deal. Like we're good. Like we do a good job. We're gonna be here. We'll changes everything. And so now, you know, DJ, everyone goes away, and you're the coach in the office. You're the personnel office. Like, I guess I better get on the phone and kind of start.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
kind of start figuring out what the next move
is. And that's the other thing with the coaching side of it. You say, okay, well, we got to get everybody on the same page. And it's easy to say, okay, we're going to lock in. We're 3-2. The season's all in front of us. This is a scramble drill for all these coaches because they all know that this has an expiration date. I got to find my next job.
Half in, half out. Like, yeah, I want us to win. I mean, I think if we win, maybe we can do it. But then you're like, yeah, I got to have it. You talk to your agent. You're trying to figure out the best way. Hey, how do I go forward? What do I do this? I mean, all of it. It all starts. I mean, DJ, we just passed the quarter pole.
I know, man. I know. And 17-game season, man.
And you're already having to deal with this kind of stuff. It's unfortunate. And it's really unfortunate. I mean, it's just unfortunate all around. It's unfortunate that, you know, the emails were littered with hateful and hurtful things that also have an impact beyond just the Raiders. It impacts the league. It impacts the way people view the league. It impacts the way those within the league view higher ups and decision makers, because no matter what we think and how we can attempt to make this an isolated incident, I mean, Coach Gruden was interacting with somebody. He was having conversations with somebody. And, you know, it means that someone was engaging in conversations back. And so it just continues to kind of shed light on just the things that we have to continue to clean up in this league. Because if we do want it to be the best league that we can be, like, we have to continue to take steps to eradicate the thinking out of it, you know. And that's really, really hard. And it's really hard for the league, who is trying to promote diversity and all of these other initiatives and racism and social justice and all that other stuff, when a guy who, I mean, for lack of a better word, was the face of the Raiders. He's the face of the Raiders. He was a prominent voice within the league. You know, it just kind of sets us all back.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, if we want to keep things rolling here, Buck, I thought we needed to talk about that right off the top. But there's a lot to get to in terms of takeaways and reactions and the impact of what we just witnessed on Monday Night Football between the Colts and the Ravens. We're going to get to that right after this. All right, Buck, I've got some thoughts on this game and some things and people that it impacted. But before I get to that, I want to give me your takeaways here. What was your thoughts on what we saw in that huge comeback for the Ravens, Lamar Jackson and company?
You know, it's so funny that the game played out the way it played out, right? After the controversy from last week over the freaking streak, right? Maintaining the 100-plus rushing game streak, like doing all the other stuff to make sure that you keep it intact. They could not run the ball a drop. They could not move the ball against the Indianapolis Colts, and I never thought that would be an issue because the Colts had struggled running struggled stopping the run heading into that game. But then watching Lamar Jackson, who I'm going to say this, DJ, I still feel like despite his success as a runner, I still feel like he's off in the running game. Yeah. I've seen Lamar Jackson fumble more, stumble more this year than I ever have when it comes to his explosiveness with the ball in his hands. That said, it was absolutely his best passing performance that we've seen. Mm-hmm. Not only the efficiency when it comes to the numbers, because people are talking about him throwing 40-plus passes, the touchdowns and the yards and accounting for 500 yards of offense. Just his willingness. There were times where I was like, man, is he going to run? Is he going to run? And he is just hanging and hanging and hanging in the pocket and delivering strikes. I think the big thing for the Ravens coaches when they look at the film is that part of it, that in a game where the pressure mounted and escalated, he didn't lean on the normal crutches that he would lean on. Mm-hmm. He has kicked off the training wheels and said, no, I'm going to throw it. I'm going to throw the rock, and I'm going to make these throws, and we're going to win because of how I do in the passing game, not necessarily how I perform in the running game. I think that is significant for the team, their confidence in him and his confidence in his own ability to throw the ball.
Yeah. I mean, give you my first two quick takeaways here. Lamar was outstanding. Won't for the life of me understand why they play so much zone, by the way. I know there's kind of those tenets of what you do, but you get carved up like a turkey. You could not cover the tight end.
No.
Andrews in the middle of the field, just finding holes, and he's put it on him play after play after play after play. And then I'm kind of like, I look at it, I'm like, okay, maybe you don't love your secondary, but who are you worried about? Like, Hollywood Brown's starting to come on a little bit, but like, I feel like that when you're watching some of these games, right? I'm like, who are you scared of? Like, this team is, you know, they don't have elite receivers. Am I crazy? Like, that's what I'm just going through. Like, I get it. You play some of these teams like, whoa, like, okay, hey, let's put an umbrella on them and let's try and just keep the ball in front. I didn't get that side of it. So I didn't get the game plan from the Colts. But, hey, Lamar, it's tough to complete that percentage on air. I don't care what's going on. He was comfortable. He was patient in the pocket. There were some things in that game I thought maybe the Kansas City Chiefs could watch and try and pull some things from. Of just sometimes you get you're used to a clock, right, of this is when the pressure's supposed to come. Ball needs to be out. And then, you know, we talk with young quarterbacks. Sometimes they're getting pressure. You got to speed up your clock. Sometimes some of these guys, when they're not gonna blitz you and they're just gonna play coverage, like you need to slow down your clock. I thought Lamar did a really good job of that in that game. So that was a takeaway on that side. The other one was, it'll get lost because they didn't win the game. But if they make a kick, the talking point today is that's the best we've seen Carson Wentz in a long time, time. And so not only is it interesting to me, this team is now 1-4. Mm-hmm. So if Carson's throwing for 400 yards and they're losing games, at some point in time, they're going to have to put him on the bench because they don't want to hit that 70% number that's going to send their first round pick to Philadelphia, which is going to be one of the more awkward things. You think about the outrage.
Do you think they really do that?
Think you remember the outrage when who was the Eagles laid down at the
end
of
Washington
against Washington, right?
Last year.
Remember that? Remember the outrage? Can you imagine the outrage if they put Carson Wentz, a healthy Carson Wentz, on the bench to avoid losing a first round pick? What if that picks up? What if that's the top five pick? I wouldn't want to be in Chris Ballard's situation because how do you say we're trying to win every game? Pull your starting core. I would have to leave him in because integrity, I couldn't look at myself in the mirror and it would make me sick to my stomach that I'm going to lose a pick, you know, because of that. Now I can tell you, if Carson was not feeling great and had a little bit of soreness, I would highly encourage him to not take any chances, but you can't, you can't do it. So that to me that's going to be an interesting storyline to follow as we go through the year. And the last thing on that, on the Wentz thing, Wentz has played good football in this league before, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then goes through his struggles. And, you know, we love to just eliminate people and write them off and say they're done. There was some patience there and it's paid off. I think patience is my word of the year this year, by the way. And so I'm thinking of a guy like Trubisky. Trubisky played some good football for a period of time with the Bears. Mm-hmm. Like, when you see like the Carson Wentzes of the world come back and play, like I'm telling you, like that's things are going well this year for Mitchell Trubisky and hasn't played a snap.
No, he hasn't played a snap. But DJ, I'm a firm believer. Well, the league that we were in as evaluators, you're a quarterback, you were a high pick, you get multiple bites to the apple.
Yeah.
You get multiple. Like it's you at least get three. Ryan Leaf got three because Ryan Leaf came through. He went to the Cowboys. He came to the Seahawks. We had him in training camp before. It was just too much for his wrist to go. DJ, when you're a first-round pick and you have talent and you've shown flashes of that talent in games, you should get multiple opportunities. Mitch Trubisky has gone to Buffalo. He's had an opportunity to do some mop-up duty, to re-kind of establish himself and learn and sit back and take a deep breath without the pressure of having to be the guy. Yeah, I think it absolutely opens up something. And I do believe patience – is critical as we evaluate all these quarterbacks harshly, sometimes too harshly for what they are. It absolutely changes the narrative because Carson Wentz played really well. And one, I don't believe it's going to end up being a conversation what we talked about with Chris Ballard. I believe the Colts are going to bounce back. They have a history of being able to bounce back under Frank Wright. Right now, the way that division is, they can quickly get back into the mix despite being 1-4. It's about Frank Wright holding it together, but building upon what Carson Wentz displayed on Monday night.
Yeah, this feels a little bit like the NFC East from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Division. I mean,
that division's not going anywhere. It's Tennessee and the Colts. And so as long as you can stay within striking distance of the Titans, you can overtake them the last month of the season. That's what I'm selling the team. Mm-hmm. Hey, guys, look, here we are. We're 1-4. Let's get to the halfway point. Let's just be within a game or two of the Titans. We'll see them. We have an opportunity to kind of control our own destiny when it comes to dealing with them. So let's just see if we can just stack some wins up and be in range at the halfway point and then see if we can get hot. But I think what they found out is how to play with their quarterback. And that also included Jonathan Taylor playing well and Marlon Mack, despite the trade requests, also showing up.
All right, here's my other slogan from this game. I'm going to go with, you know, you go. If you know Lamar Jackson is your guy, you go. You get that contract done earlier rather than later because, Buck, that number is going up and up and up and up. And if you remember, we talked about his contract, I think, over the summer.
Yeah.
I think we were in agreement. Check me if I'm wrong here. I think we said big yearly average and maybe a little bit shorter on the years. Maybe shorter we're a three or four-year term. Mm-hmm. Because
he
moves around and makes sure that he stays healthy. He's done a great job of staying healthy, but maybe you didn't want to go all the way long-term, but we're happy to pay him big numbers here in a 3-4 year period. I'm telling you what, he keeps playing like that last night. He ain't going to take anything less than a long-term deal. And it is going to be a massive number.
It's going to be a whopper. DJ, he's going to be a whopper. Cause he is at the, he's at the Pat Mahomes number. Yeah. He's going to be in that ballpark, whether people like it or not. And Josh Allen's deal is the floor for what he's going to do.
Well, because yeah, 258, right?
258. I think the average is like 42, 43. He's going to look at it and like, yeah, but he's never been an MVP. So I at least have to get that just to start. We can only start the conversation at where he's at. And maybe
and they're gonna come back and say he's been in a championship game. That's what they'll come back and say.
And he's a I've been an MVP and
I'm just saying that's gonna be the discussion between the two teams.
It's between the two sides.
That's why you gotta get this done. Get it done before.
Get it done.
And we talked about this, and I think we'll kind of veer off topic here, but I think some people got upset with kind of the Baker Mayfield stuff and saying, you know, you're placing blame. No. We've said Baker Mayfield is a good player. Mm-hmm. He is a good player, but you cannot watch what some of these other quarterbacks in the AFC do and put him in that class. And if you watch that game last night, that was a truck on full display. Oh. That was Lamar Jackson carrying their football team to victory. That was him without his left tackle, minus their top running backs. Their first round wide receiver is not out there. And doesn't matter. He went out there, put the team on his back, down a big deficit, and won the football game. That is the definition of a truck. And trucks get paid. That's how that works.
Trucks get paid. And not only that, DJ, once again, we talk about building your team. One of the first things you do in a team building thing is you have to make sure that you have a team that can win the division. So you have to be able to compare my quarterback to the other quarterbacks in the division.
There you go.
Now, do I have a better quarterback than Baltimore who has Lamar Jackson? Do I have a better quarterback than what Cincinnati has in Joe Burrow? We don't know what Pittsburgh is going to do going forward. So
you might have a better team. You might have a better team.
Right. Yeah, but so you got to think about that. But then not only, you got to stretch it out to, okay, we got to win a division to get a playoff berth, but then who do we have to beat to get to the Super Bowl in the AFC? Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert. We just talked about Lamar Jackson. I mean, who else? I mean, Derek Carr, maybe you can talk about that. Like, we don't know. There's an asterisk by Deshaun Watson, but you're thinking, do I have a quarterback in a shootout that can deal with the four guys that are already mentioned? Mm-hmm. That's the standard. My guy has to be able to go to the shootout against those guys mm-hmm. and give us a reasonable chance to win the game.
And maybe your other 10 guys are so much better than the other team's other 10 guys that you can navigate the difference between the talent and the quarterbacks. Again, neither one of us are saying anything bad about Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield's a good player. And I give Baker credit. This was an 0-16 team when he got there. Yeah. And he has been a part of that group that's got them to be a playoff team and one of the best turnarounds we've seen in sports. So I give him all the credit in that in the world. But, I mean, Jim Collins wrote a book called Good to Great, Buck.
That is what it is. Now, and I can say this, and I will say this on Baker Mayfield's behalf. The L.A. Rams went to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff, who's another good quarterback. Mm-hmm. They were, I mean, you could reasonably say that they probably could have, maybe should have won the Super Bowl. They did that with him. So there's a path to doing it. Yeah. But you also have to understand, if you take that path, you have to sacrifice some stuff with the quarterback to make sure that the other stuff is good enough to offset the talent deficiencies between him and the other guy.
That's the second contract. And that's the whole thing about the second contract. You know, it's just that first contract, you can afford to have everybody else you want. You get to bring all your other toys. But when you get the second contract, you don't get to keep all your toys anymore. We saw that with the Rams. They get rid of some of those toys.
Hey, DJ, we're going on vacation. Hey, kids, we're going on vacation. But look, Daddy says you only can take one carry-on.
Yeah.
One carry-on. So you can't take all the toys. So you get to pick, what do you want to take?
Yeah.
And that's what the Browns are saying. Hey, yeah, Baker, you can come. But look, there are only so many toys you can bring with you. What do you bring?
Yep.
You can't bring the entire playroom. Only a couple toys. And so that's what the second contract is about.
No doubt. All right, one more topic I want to get to. I want to talk real quick about what we saw from the upset with A&M over Alabama right after this. All right, Buck. Want to touch some college here real quick. I don't know how much you saw of the Alabama A&M game. I'd love to get your thoughts on it if you did.
Well, the one thing I would say is this. To knock off Alabama, one, you have to have someone who absolutely believes that you can knock them off. Mm-hmm. Jimbo Fisher has been banging the drum. Oh, we're going to get them.
Yeah.
We're going to get them. So you got to have that first. You got to have a self-belief in the coach that, oh, yeah.
He said he was going to beat their ASSs over the summer.
How about that? He said it. You have to have belief. And
then, reminded me of Harbaugh, by the way, except, you know, this is a little different. A&M's talent versus what Harbaugh had at Stanford at that time was a little different, but same level of confidence.
Same level of confidence. You got to be salty. Second thing, you have to build the team to be able to beat them. You've told me, because I think you've gone down to maybe you spoke to the team or whatever, and you're like, yeah, they looked apart.
Yep.
He has built a team that is willing to go in the ring with Alabama. If Alabama is the heavyweight champion, well, you better have some size, some girth to be able to deal with them. And when I look at them, man, they look like – I got a chance to see them last year, Orange Bowl against North Carolina, and they had size, physicality, toughness. They looked like a high-end SEC team, and they did it. And even though they've had some missteps this year, they still looked the part. And you can't coach the game or play the game scared. Jimbo Fisher is not afraid of Nick Saban. No matter what Nick Saban has, no matter how many trophies he has on the mantle, he ain't scared. And I think that impacts the way that you go forward.
I was thinking about, you know, you go into the grocery store, you got the different little sections, you know. I just think of like A&M and you look at Alabama and LSU when they're right. I feel like all of college football goes into the grocery store. And if you say like the fruits and vegetables are kind of like skill guys, you know, like you see all these other college coaches get their little carts and they go over there. And those SEC coaches go right to the meat. They just go right to the back. I mean, all that, that's all the defensive linemen. That's where they just go. They're racing their carts to go back.
They're going to the butcher block.
That's it.
I need some pork loin. I need, let me get that shoulder. Yeah. I need this. DJ, it is unbelievable to watch. Like when you have the Saturdays and you can watch all the games and you just look, even just TV scouting, you're like, let me pop on Georgia Auburn. Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, look at them show ponies. Like, look at the Clydesdale.
Unbelievable. I mean, like, if you think about it, like, if there's 50, let's say, of all grades, right? If there's 50 great defensive linemen in college football, am I crazy? I think 42 of them are in the SEC. Like, it's just they have the corner of the market on defensive linemen.
And I know people get tired of hearing the SEC thing, but my goodness, it just looks different.
I was talking to somebody who was at the SC game, right? SC lost to Utah last week.
Yeah.
And this person told me when I was down there walking on the field, I couldn't tell who their defensive linemen were.
Oh, that's horrible. That's terrible.
So, you know.
That is awful, but it speaks volumes about.
They don't fill out their uniform. It's just a different – that's what I'm saying. You can go get all the wide receivers you want. They got Drake London's a stud, man. He might be the best receiver in the country. Everybody SEC is like, you get your – we'll get wide receivers. They're everywhere. We'll go get the defensive linemen. That's where we're going.
We're investing in the foundation of the house. Like, we're making sure we have those guys. To that point, I don't know if you had a chance to see Kentucky, but the job –
I haven't seen them yet. But that OC came from the Rams, right?
He was on McVay's staff. But once again, like in speaking to what they look like, they look like a team. Yeah. Mark Stoops has gone in there and he's got them going. They look like a big physical team that can go in there. They're 6-0. They've knocked off Florida. They've done some really good things in terms of like how they play. You have to do it. And so as team builders, we talk about that. You have to know exactly who you're facing and how you have to build your team. Mm-hmm. And those teams down in the SEC are building their teams a certain way. And unless you are a team in another conference that is taking that, if you're not taking that blueprint, you're not going to beat them in the playoff.
Yeah.
You're not. You're just not going to do it. And so you have to always keep an eye on what's going down there in the SEC to make sure that you're building your team the right way. Because if not, it's going to be a problem when you have to see them.
No doubt. All right, we got to run. I want to encourage everybody to check out this next podcast we're going to do on Thursday, because we have one of the top college coaches is going to join us. It might not be the guy you think of, but trust me, you're going to dig it. So be on the lookout for that. I want to encourage everybody again, check out the TV show. That's every Monday. That's 3 p.m. Eastern. Another great episode yesterday. So encourage you guys to check that out each and every Monday. Thursday Night Football coming up. We'll talk more about that on the next episode, but you can find us again. That is twitch.tv/movethesticks. Joy Taylor, Bucky, myself, we have a blast on there. So come hang out with us there. We'd love to talk to you. We chat with you guys during the game. It's really interactive. It's really fun. All right, that's going to do it for us. Appreciate you guys hanging. We'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.